Sherry looked up from her workbench. "The wick's full of arsenous acid," she said. "Well done, sir. This candle even weighs slightly more than other candles." "What an evil way to kill anyone," said Angua. "Certainly very clever," said Mimes. "Veterinary sits up half the night writing, and in the morning the candles burn down. Poisoned by the light. The light's something you don't see." "Who looks at the light? Not some plodding old copper." "Oh, you're not that old," said Carrot cheerfully. "What about plodding?" "Or that plodding, either," Carrot added quickly. "I've always pointed out to people that you walk in a very purposeful and meaningful manner." Vimes gave him a sharp look and saw nothing more than a keen and innocently helpful expression. "We don't look at the light because the light is what we look with," said Vimes. "Okay. And now I think we should go and have a look at the candle factory. Shouldn't we?" "You come, Little Bottom, and bring your... Have you got taller, Little Bottom?"
"High-heeled boots, sir," said Cherry.
"I thought dwarfs always wore iron boots."
"Yes, sir.
But I've got high heels and on mine, sir. I welded them on."
"Oh, fine.
Right." Vimes pulled himself together. "Well, if you can still totter, bring your alchemy stuff with you. Detritus should have come off duty from the palace. When it comes to locked doors, you can't beat Detritus. He's a walking crowbar. We'll pick him up on the way." He loaded his crossbow and lit a match.
"Right," he said. "We've done it the modern way. Now let's try policing like grandfather used to do it."
"It's time to prod buttocks, sir," said Carrot hurriedly.
"Close," said Vimes, taking a deep drag and blowing out a smoke ring, "but no cigar."
Sergeant Cullen's view of the world was certainly changing. Just when something was about to fix itself firmly in his mind as the worst moment of his entire life, it was hurriedly replaced by something even nastier. Firstly, the drainpipe he was riding hit the wall of the building opposite. In a well-organized world, he might have landed on a fire escape, but fire escapes were unknown in Ankh-Morpork, and the flames generally had to leave via the roof. When the pipe thus leaning against the wall, he found himself sliding down the diagonal. Even this might have been a happy outcome, were it not for the fact that Cullen was a heavy man, and as his weight slid nearer to the middle of the unsupported pipe, the pipe sagged. And cast iron has only a very limited amount of sag before it snaps, which it now did. Cullen dropped and landed on something soft, at least softer than the street, and the something went mrrrrm. He bounced off it and landed on something lower and softer, which went barrrrp, and rolled from that onto something even lower and apparently made of feathers, which went insane and pecked him. The street was full of animals, milling around uncertainly. When animals are in a state of uncertainty, they get nervous. The street was already, as it were, paved with anxiety. The only benefit to Sergeant Cullen was that this made it slightly softer than otherwise would have been the case. Hooves trod on his hands. Very large, dribbly noses sneezed at him. Sergeant Cullen had not hitherto had a great deal of experience of animals, except in portion sizes. When he'd been little, he'd had a pink stuffed pig called Mr. Dreadful, and he got up to Chapter 6 in Animal Husbandry. It had woodcuts in it. There was no mention of hot, smelly breath and great clomping feet like soup plates on a stick. Cows, in Sergeant Cullen's book, should go moo. Every child knew that. They shouldn't go murm like some kind of undersea monster and spray you with spit. He tried to get up, skidded on some cows. Some cow's moment of crisis, and sat down on a sheep. It went, blard! What kind of noise was that for a sheep to make? He got up again and tried to make his way to the curb.
Shoo, get out of the damn way, you sheep. Garn. A goose hissed at him and stuck out altogether too much neck. Colin backed off and stopped when something nudged him in the back. It was a pig. It was no Mr. Dreadful. This wasn't the little piggy that went to market, or the little piggy that stayed at home. It would be quite hard to imagine what kind of foot would have made a piggy like this. But it would probably be the kind that had hair and scales and toenails like cashew nuts. This piggy was the size of a pony. This piggy had tusks, and it wasn't pink. It was a blue-black color and covered with sharp hair. But it did have... Let's be fair, thought Cullen. Little red piggy eyes. The little piggy hood looked like the little piggy that killed the boarhounds, disemboweled the horse, and ate the huntsman. Colin turned around and came face to face with a bull like a beef cube on legs. It turned its huge head from side to side so that each rolling eye could get a sight of the sergeant. But it was clear that neither of them liked him very much. It lowered its head. There wasn't room for it to charge, but it could certainly push. As the animals crowded around him, Colin took the only way of escape possible. There were men slumped all over the alley. Hello, hello, hello. What's all this then? Said Carrot. A man who was holding his arms and groaning looked up at him. We were viciously attacked. We don't have time for this, said Vimes. We may have, said Ingua. She tapped him on the shoulder and pointed to the wall opposite, on which was written in a familiar script, No Master. Carrot hunched down and spoke to the casualty. You were attacked by a golem, were you? He said. Right, vicious bugger. Just walked out of the fog went for us. You know what they're like. Carrot gave the man a cheerful smile. Then his gaze traveled along the man's body to the big hammer lying in the gutter, and moved from that to the other tools strewn around the scene of the fight. Several had their hands broken. There was a long crowbar, bent nearly into a circle. It's lucky you were all so well armed, he said. It turned on us, said the man. He tried to snap his fingers, just like that. Ark! You seem to have hurt your fingers. You're right. It's just that I don't understand how it could have turned on you and just walked out of the fog, said Carrot. Everyone knows they're not allowed to fight back. Fight back, Carrot, repeated. It's not right, them walking around the streets like that, the man muttered, looking away. There was the sound of running feet behind them, and a couple of men in bloodstained aprons caught up with them. It went that way, one yelled. You'll be able to catch up with it if you hurry. Come on, don't hang around. What do we pay our taxes for, said the other. It went all around the castle yards and let everything out. The cattle yards and let everything out. Everything. You can't move on Pigsty Hill. A golem let all the cattle out, said Vimes. What for? How should I know? It took the Utisco out of Sock's slaughterhouse, so half the damn things are following it around. And then it went and put old Fosdyke in his sausage machine. What? Oh, it didn't turn the handle. It just shoved a handful of parsley in his mouth, dropped an onion down his trousers, covered him in oatmeal, and dropped him in the hopper. Angua's shoulders started to shake, even Vimes grinned. And then it went into the poultry merchants, grabbed Mr. Turwill, Willie, and the man stopped, aware that there was a lady present. even if she was making snorting noises while trying not to laugh. He continued in a mumble, made use of some sage and onion, if you know what I mean. You mean he, Vimes began, yes. His companion nodded. Poor old Turwill won't be able to look sage and onion in the face again, I reckon. By the sound of it, that's the last thing he'll do, said Vimes. Angua had to turn her back. Tell him about what happened in your pork butchers, said the man's companion. I don't think you'll need to, said Vimes. I'm seeing a pattern here. Right, and poor young Sid's only an apprentice and didn't deserve what it done to him. Oh dear, said Carrot. I think I've got an ointment that might be... Will it help with the apple? The man demanded. Shoved an apple in his mouth? Wrong! Vimes winced. Ouch! What's going to be done, eh? Said the butcher, his face a few inches from Vimes. Well, if you can get a grip on the stem. I'm serious. What are you going to do? I'm a taxpayer, and I know my rights. He prodded Vimes in the breastplate. Vimes's expression went wooden. He looked down at the finger, and then backed up at the man's large red nose. In that case, said Vimes, I suggest you take another apple and... excuse me, said Carrot loudly. You're Mr. Maxalot, aren't you? Got a shop in the shambles? Yes, that's right. What of it? It's just that I don't recall seeing your name on the register of taxpayers, which is very odd because you said you were a taxpayer. But, of course, you wouldn't lie about a thing like that. And anyway, when you paid your taxes, they would have given you a receipt, because that's the law, and I'm sure you'd be able to find it if you looked. The butcher lowered his finger. Yes. I could come and help you if you'd like, said Carrot. The butcher gave Vimes a despairing look. He really does read that stuff, said Vimes. For pleasure, Carrot. Why don't you... My gods, what the hell is that? There was a bellow further up the street. Something big and muddy was approaching at a sort of menacing amble. In the gloom, it looked vaguely like a very fat centaur. Half man, half... In fact, it was, he realized, as it bounced nearer, half colon, half bull. Sergeant Colin had lost his helmet and had a certain look about him that suggested he had been close to the soil. As the massive bull cantered past, the sergeant rolled his eyes wildly and said, I daren't get off, I daren't get off. How did you get on? Shouted Vimes. It wasn't easy, sir. I just grabbed the orange, sir. Next minute, I was on its back. Well, hang on. Yes, sir, hanging on, sir.
Rogers the Bulls were angry and bewildered, which counts as the basic state of mind for a full-grown bull. For full-grown bulls. But they had a particular reason. Beef cattle have a religion. They are deeply spiritual animals. They believe that good and obedient cattle go to a better place when they die, through a magic door. They don't know what happens next, but they've heard that it involves really good eating and, for some reason, horseradish. Rogers had been quite looking forward to it. They were getting a bit creaky these days, and the cows seemed to run faster than they had done when they were lads. They could just taste that heavenly horseradish, and instead they'd been herded into a crowded pen for a day, and then the gate had been opened, and there'd been animals everywhere, and this did not look like the promised land. And someone was on their back. They'd tried to buck him off a few times. In Roger's heyday, the impudent man would by now be a few stringy red stains on the ground. But finally, the arthritic bulls had given up until such time as they could find a handy tree on which to scrape him off. They just wished the wretched man would stop yelling. Vimes took a few steps
after the bull, and then turned. Carrot? Angua? You two get down to Carrie's tallow works. Just keep an eye on it until we get there, understand? Spy out the place, but don't go in, understand? Right? Do not in any circumstances move in. Do I make myself clear? Just remain in the area, right? Yes, sir, said Carrot. Detritus, let's get Fred off that thing. The crowds were melting away ahead of the bull. A ton of pedigree bull does not experience traffic congestion. At least not for any length of time. Can't you jump off, Fred? Vimes yelled as he ran along behind. I do not wish to give that a try, sir. Well, can you steer it? How, sir? Take the bull by the horns, man. Cullen tentatively reached out and took a horn in each hand. Rogers the bull turned his head and nearly pulled him off. He's a bit stronger than me, sir. Quite a lot stronger, actually, sir. I could shoot it through the head, through your head with my bow, Mr. Vimes, said Detritus, flourishing his converted siege weapon. This is a crowded street, Sergeant. It might hit an innocent person, even an Ankh-Morpork. Sorry, sir, Detritus brightened. But if it did, we could always say they'd been guilty of something, sir. No, what's that chicken doing? A small black bantam cock raced up the street, ran between the bull's legs, and skidded to a halt just in front of Rogers. A smaller figure jumped off its back, leapt up, caught hold of the ring through the bull's nose, swung up further until it was in the mass of curls on the bull's forehead, and then took firm hold of a lock of hair in each tiny hand. It looks like we met Arthur, the Gnome, said Detritus. He, trying to nut de bull. There was a noise like a slow woodpecker working on a particularly difficult tree, and it punctuated a litany of complaints from somewhere between the animal's eyes. Take that, your big lump that yees are. The bull stopped. He tried to turn his head so that one or other of the Rogerses could see what the hell it was that was hammering at its forehead. It might as well have tried to looking down at its own ears. It staggered backwards. Fred, Cullen whispered, you slip off of its back while it's busy. With a panicky look, Sergeant Colton swung a leg over the bull's huge back and slid down to the ground. Vimes grabbed him and hustled him into a doorway. Then he hustled him out again. A doorway was far too confined a space in which to be anywhere near Fred Cullen. Why are you all covered in crap, Fred? Well, sir, you know that creek that you're up without a paddle? It started there, and it's got worse, sir. Good grief, worse than that? Permission to go and have a bath, sir? No, but you could stand back a few more feet. What happened to your helmet? Last time I saw it, it was on a sheep, sir. Sir, I was tied up and shoved in a cellar and heroically broke free, sir. And I was chased by one of the golems, sir. Where was this? Colm had hoped he wouldn't be asked that. It was a place in the shambles, he said. It was foggy, so I... Vimes grabbed Colin's wrists. What's this? They tied me up with strings, sir. But at great personal risk to my... risk of life and limb, I... This doesn't look like string to me, said Vimes. No, sir? No, this looks like candle wick. Colin looked blank. That's a clue, sir, he said, hopefully. There was a splattering noise as Vimes slapped him on the back. Well done, Fred, he said, wiping his hand on his trousers. It's certainly a corroboration. That's what I thought, said Colin quickly. This is a corroboration, and I've got to get it to Commander Vimes as soon as possible, regardless of... Why is that gnome nutting that bull, Fred? That's we met Arthur, sir. We owe him a dollar. He was of some help, sir. Rogers the bull was on his knees, dazed and bewildered. It wasn't that wee Matt Arthur was capable of delivering a killing blow, but he just didn't stop. After a while, the noise and the thumping got on people's nerves. Should we help him? Said Vimes. Looks like he's doing all right by himself, sir, said Colin. Wee Matt Arthur looked up and grinned. $1, right? He shouted. No welching, or I'll come after yous. One of these buggers trod on me grandpa once. Was he hurt? He got one of his horns twisted right off. Vimes took Sergeant Colton firmly by the arm. Come on, Fred. It's all hitting the street now. Right, sir. And most of it splashing. I say, you there. You're a watchman, aren't you? Come over here. Vimes turned. A man had pushed his way through the crowds. On the whole, Colin reflected, it was just possible that the worst moment of his life hadn't happened yet. Vimes tended to react in a ballistic way towards, like, I say, you there, when uttered in a certain kind of neighing voice. The speaker had an aristocratic look about him, and the angry air of a man not accustomed to the rigors of life who has just found one happening to him. Vimes saluted smartly. Yes, sir. I'm a watchman, sir. Well, just you come along with me and arrest this thing. It's disturbing the workers. What thing, sir? A golem man walked into the factory as bold as he liked and started painting on the damn walls. What factory, sir? You come with me, my man. I happen to be a very good friend of your commander, and I can't say I like your attitude. Sorry about that, sir, said Vimes, with a cheerfulness that Sergeant Cullen had come to dread. There was a nondescript factory on the other side of the street. The man strode in. He said golem, sir, murmured Cullen. Vimes had known Fred Cullen a long time. Yes, Fred, so it's vitally important for you to stay on guard out here, he said. The relief rose off Colin like steam. That's right, sir, he said. The factory was full of sewing machines. People were sitting meekly in front of them. It was the sort of thing the guilds hated. But since the Guild of Seamstresses didn't take all that much interest in sewing, there was no one to object. Endless belts lined up from each machine to pulleys on a line long spindle near the roof, which in turn were driven by Vimes's eyes followed it down the length of the workshop, a treadmill, now stationary and somewhat broken. A couple of golems were standing forlornly alongside it, looking lost. There was a hole in the wall quite close to it, and above it, someone had written in red paint, "Workers, no master but yourselves." Vimes grinned. It smashed its way in, broke the treadmill, pulled my golems out, painted that stupid message on the wall, and stamped out again, said the man behind him. Yes, I see. A lot of people use oxen in their treadmills, said Vimes mildly. What's that got to do with it? Anyway, cattle can't keep going 24 hours a day. Vimes's gaze worked its way along the rows of workers. Their faces had that worried Cockbill Street look that you got when you were cursed with pride as well as poverty. No, indeed, he said. Most of the clothing workshops are up at Knapp Hill, but the wages are cheaper down here, aren't they? People are jollily glad to get the work. Yes, said Vimes, looking at the faces again. Glad. At the far end of the factory, he noted the golems were trying to rebuild their treadmill. Now you listen to me. What I want you to do is, the factory owner began. Vimes' hand gripped his collar and dragged him forward until his face was a few inches from Vimes' own. No, you listen to me, hissed Vimes. I mix with crooks and thieves and thugs all day, and that doesn't worry me at all. But after 2 minutes with you, I need a bath. And if I find that damn golem, I'll shake its damn hand, do you hear me? The surprise of Vimes that wasn't raging, the man found enough courage to say, "How dare you? You're supposed to be the law." Vimes's furious finger almost went up the man's nose. "Where shall I start?" he yelled. He glared at the two golems. "And why are you clowns repairing the treadmill?" he shouted. "Good grief, haven't got the sense you were born. Haven't you got any sense?" He stormed out of the building. Sergeant Cullen stopped trying to scrape himself clean and ran to catch up with him. "I heard some people say that they saw a golem come out of the other door, sir," he said. "It was a red one. You know, red clay." But the one that was after me was white, sir. Are you angry, Sam? Who's the man who owns that place? That's Mr. Catterall, sir. You know, he's always writing you letters about there being too many what he calls lesser races in the watch. You know, trolls and dwarfs. The sergeant had to trot to keep up with the vibes. Get some zombies, he said. You've always been dead against zombies. Excuse my pun, said Sergeant Cullen. Anyone to join, are there? Oh, yes, sir. A couple of good lads, sir. And but for the gray skin hanging off of him, you'd swear they hadn't been buried 5 minutes. Swear them in tomorrow. Right, sir. Good idea. And, of course, it's a great saving not having to include them in the pension plan. They can patrol up on King's Down. After all, they're only human. Right, sir. When Sam is in these moods, Cullen thought, you agree with everything. You're really getting the hang of this affirmative action stuff, eh, sir? Right now, I'd swear on a Gorgon. There's always Mr. Bleakley, sir. He's getting fed up with working in the kosher butchers, but no vampires. Never any vampires. Now let's get a move on, Fred. Nobby Knobs ought to have known. That's what he told himself as he scuttled through the streets. All that stuff about kings and stuff. They'd wanted him to. It was a terrible thought. Volunteer. Nobby had spent a lifetime in one uniform or another, and one of the most basic lessons he'd learned was that the men with red faces and plummy voices never ever gave cushy numbers to the likes of Nobby. They'd ask for volunteers to do something big and clean, and you'd end up scrubbing some damn great drawbridge. They'd say, anyone here like good food? And you'd be peeling potatoes for a week. You never ever volunteered, not even if a sergeant stood there and said, we need someone to drink alcohol, bottles of, and make love, passionate, to women, for the use of. There was always a snag. If a choir of angels asked for some volunteers for paradise to step forward, Nobby knew enough to take one smart pace to the rear. When the call came for Corporal Knobs, it would not find him wanting. It would not find him at all. Nobby avoided a herd of pigs in the middle of the street. Even Mr. Vimes had never expected him to volunteer. He respected Nobby's pride. Nobby's head ached. It must have been the quail's eggs, he was sure. They couldn't be healthy birds to lay titchy eggs like that. He sidled past a cow that had got its head stuck in someone's window. Nobby as king. Oh, yes. No one ever gave Knobs anything except maybe a skin disease or 60 lashes. It was a dog-eat-Knobs world, right enough. If there were to be a world champion, a competition for losers, and Knobs would come first. Last. He stopped running and went to earth in a doorway. In its welcome shadows, he extracted a very short cigarette end from behind his ear and lit it. Now that he felt safe enough to think about more than fight, he wondered about all the animals that seemed to be on the streets. Unlike the family tree that had borne Fred Cullen as its fruit, the creeping vine of the Knobses had flourished only within city walls. Nobby was vaguely aware of animals as being food in a primary stage and left it at that. But he was pretty sure they weren't supposed to be wandering around untidily like this. Gangs of men were trying to round them up, since they were tired and working at cross purposes, and the animals were hungry and bewildered. All that was happening was that the streets were getting a lot muddier. Nobby became aware that he was not alone in the doorway. He looked down. Also lurking in the shadows was a goat. It was unkempt and smelly, but it turned its head and gave Nobby the most knowing look he'd ever seen on the face of an animal. Unexpectedly, and most uncharacteristically, Nobby was struck by a surge of fellow feeling. He pinched out the end of his cigarette and passed it down to the goat, which ate it. "You and me both," said Nobby. Miscellaneous livestock scattered madly as Carrot, Angua, and Cherry made their way down the shambles. They especially tried to keep away from Angua. It seemed to Cherry that an invisible barrier was advancing in front of them. Some animals tried to climb walls or scattered madly into side alleys. "Why are they so scared?" said Cherry. "Can't imagine," said Angua. A few maddened sheep ran away from them as they walked around the candle factory. Light from its high windows indicated that candle making continued all night. "They make nearly 500,000 candles every 24 hours, said Carrot. "I heard they've got very advanced machinery. Sounds very interesting. I'd love to see it." At the rear of the premises, light blazed out into the fog. Crates of candles were being manhandled on a succession of carts. "Looks normal enough," said Carrot, as they eased themselves into a conveniently shadowy doorway. "Busy, though." "I don't see what good this is going to do," said Angua. "As soon as they see us, they can destroy any evidence. And even if we find arsenic, so what? There's no crime in owning arsenic, is there?" "Or is there a crime in owning that?" whispered Cherry. A golem was walking slowly up the alley. It was quite unlike any other golem they had seen. The others were ancient and had repaired themselves so many times they were as shapeless as a gingerbread man. But this one looked like a human, or at least like humans wished they could look. It resembled a statue made of white clay. Around its head, part of the very design was a crown. "I was right," murmured Carrot. "They did make themselves a golem, the poor devils. They thought a king would make them free." "Look at its legs," said Angua. As the golem walked, lines of red light appeared and disappeared all over its legs and across its body and arms. "It's cracking," she said. "I knew you couldn't bake pottery in an old bread oven," said Cherry. "It's not the right shape." The golem pushed open a door and disappeared into the factory. "Let's go," said Carrot. "Commander Vimes told us to wait for him," said Angua. "Yes, but we don't know what might be going on in there," said Carrot. "Besides, he likes us to use our initiative. We can't just hang around now." He darted across the alley and opened the door. There were crates piled inside, with a narrow passageway between them. From all around them, but slightly muffled by the crates, came the clicking and rattling of the factory. The air smelled of hot wax. Cherry was aware of a whispered conversation going on several feet above her little round helmet. "I wish Mr. Vimes hadn't wanted us to bring her. Supposing something happens to her. What are you talking about? Well, you know, she's a girl. So what? There's at least 3 female dwarfs in the watch already, and you don't worry about them. Oh, come on, name one. Lara Skulldrinker, for a start." "No, really? Are you calling this nose a liar? But he broke up a fight in the miner's arms single-handedly last week. Well, why did you assume females are weaker? You wouldn't worry about me taking on a vicious bar crowd by myself. I give aid where necessary, to me or to them. That's unfair, is it? I wouldn't have them help them unless you got really rough. And so? And they say chivalry is dead. Anyway, Cherry is a bit different. I'm sure she's good at alchemy. But we'd better watch her back in a fight. Hold on." They'd stepped out into the factory. Candles whirled overhead, hundreds of them, thousands of them, dangling by their wicks from an endless belt of complex wooden links that switched back its way up and down the long hall. "I heard about this," said Carrot. "It's called a producing line. It's a way of making thousands of things that are all the same. But look at the speed. I'm amazed," the treadmill can, Angua pointed. There was a treadmill creaking around beside them. But there was nothing inside it. Something's got to be powering all this, said Angua. Carrot pointed. Further up the hall, the switchback saw the line converge in a complicated knot. There was a figure somewhere in the middle, arms moving in a blur. Just beside Carrot, the line ended at a big wooden hopper. Candles cascaded into it. No one had been emptying it, and they were tumbling over the pile and rolling onto the floor. Cherry, said Carrot, do you know how to use any kind of weapons? No, Captain Carrot. Right. You just wait in the alley, then. I don't want any harm coming to you. She scuttled off, looking relieved. Angela sniffed the air. There's been a vampire here, she said. I think we'd, Carrot began. I knew you'd find out. I wish I'd never bought that damn thing. I've got a bow. I warn you. I've got a crossbow. They turned. Ah, Mr. Carey, said Carrot cheerfully. He produced his patch. Captain Carrot, Ankhmore Pork City Watch. I know who you are. I know who you are. And what you are, too. I knew you'd come. I've got a bow, and I'm not afraid to use it. The crossbow's point moved uncertainly, proving him a liar. Really, said Angua. What are we? What we are? I didn't even want to get involved, said Carrie. It killed those old men, didn't it? Yes, said Carrot. Why? I didn't tell it to. Because they helped make it, I think, said Carrot. It knew who to blame. The golem sold it to me, said Carrie. I thought it'd help build up the business, but the damn thing won't stop. He glanced up at the line of candles whirring overhead, but jerked his head back before Angua could move. Works hard, does it? Ha, but Carrie didn't look like a man enjoying a joke. He looked like a man in private torment. I've laid off everyone except the girls in the packing department, and they're on 3 shifts in overtime. I've got 4 men out looking for tallow, 2 negotiating for wicks, and 3 trying to buy more storage space. Then get it to stop making candles, said Carrot. It goes off into the streets when we run out of tallow. You want it walking around looking for something to do? Hey, you two stay together, Carrie added urgently, waving the crossbow. Look, all you have to do is change the words in its head, said Carrot. It won't let me. Don't you think I've tried? It can't not let you, said Carrot. Golems have to let... I said it won't let me. What about the poison candles, said Carrot. That wasn't my idea. Whose idea was it? Carrie's crossbow swung back and forth. He licked his lips. This has all gone too far. Far too far, he said. I'm getting out. Whose idea, Mr. Carrie? I'm not going to end up in some alley somewhere with as much blood as a banana. Now then, we wouldn't do anything like that, said Carrie. Mr. Carrie was exporting terror. Angua could smell it streaming off him. He might pull the trigger out of sheer panic. There was another smell, too. Who's the vampire, she said. For a moment, she thought the man would fire the crossbow. I never said anything about him. You've got garlic in your pocket, said Angua, and the place reeks of vampire. He said we could get the golem to do anything, Carrie mumbled. Like making poison candles, said Carrot. Yes. But he said it'd just keep veterinary out of the way, said Carrie. He seemed to be getting a tenuous grip on himself. And he's not dead. Cause I'd have heard, he said. I shouldn't think making him ill is a crime. So you can't... The candles killed 2 other people, said Carrie. Carrie started to panic again. Who? An old lady and a baby in Cockbill Street. Were they important? Carrot nodded to himself. I was almost feeling sorry for you, he said. Right up to that point. You're a lucky man, Mr. Carey. You think so? Oh, yes. We got to you before Commander Vimes said. Now, just put down the crossbow and we can talk about it. There was a noise. Or rather, The sudden cessation of a noise that had been so pervasive that it had no longer been consciously heard. The clacking line had stopped. There was a chorus of little waxy thuds on... as the hanging candles swung and hit one another. And then silence unrolled. The last candle dropped off the line, tumbled down the heap in the hopper, and bounced on the floor. In the silence, the sound of footsteps. Carrie started to back away. "Too late," he moaned. Both Carrie and Angua saw his finger move. Angua pushed Carrie out of the way as the claw released the string. But he had anticipated this, and his hand was already flinging itself up and across. She heard the sickening, tearing noise as his palm whirled in front of her face, and his grunt as the force of the bolt spun him around. He landed heavily on the floor, clutching his left hand. The crossbow bolt was sticking out of the palm. Angua crouched down. "It doesn't look barbed. Let me pull." Garrett grabbed her wrist. "The point's silver. Don't touch it." They both looked at a shadow across the light. The king golem looked down at her. She felt her teeth and fingernails begin to lengthen. Then she saw the small round face of Sherry peering nervously around a pile of crates. Angua fought down her werewolf instincts, screamed, "Stay right there," at the dwarf, and every swelling hair follicle, and hesitated between pursuing the fleeing Carrie and dragging Carrie to safety. She told her body again that a wolf shape was not an option. There were too many strange smells. Too many fires. The golem glistened with tallow and wax. She backed away. Behind the golem, she saw Sherry look down at the groaning Carrie, and then up at a fire axe hooked on the wall. The dwarf took it down and weighed it vaguely in her hand. "Don't try," Angua began. "Tjerjusk big hazk t." "Oh no," moaned Carrie. "Not that one." Sherry came up behind the golem at a run and hacked at its waist. The axe rebounded, but she pirouetted with it and caught the statue on the thigh, chipping off a piece of clay. Angua hesitated. Sherry's axe was making blurred orbits around the golem while its wielder yelled more terrible battle cries. Angua couldn't make out any words, but many dwarf cries didn't bother with words. They went straight for emotions in some form, in sonic form. Chips of pottery ricocheted off the crates as each blow landed. "What did she yell?" Angua said as she pulled Carrie out of the way. "It's the most menacing dwarf battle cry there is. Once it's been shouted, someone has to be killed." "What's it mean?" "Today is a good day for someone else to die." The golem watched the dwarf incuriously, like an elephant watching an attack by a rogue chicken. Then it picked the axe out of the air, Sherry trailing behind it like a comet, and hurled it aside. Angua hauled Carrot to his feet. Blood dripped from his hand. She tried to shut her nostrils. "Full moon tomorrow. No more choices." "Maybe we can reason with it," Carrot started. "Attention! This is the real world calling," shouted Angua. Carrot drew a sword. "I am arresting you," he began. The golem's arm whirred across. The sword buried itself to the hilt in a crate of candles. "Got any more clever ideas?" said Angua. They backed away. "Or can we go now?" "No, we've got to stop it somewhere. Their heels met a wall of crates." "I think we found the place," said Angua, as the golem raised its fists again. You duck right, I'll duck left. Maybe a blow rocked the big double doors on the far wall. The king golem's head turned. The doors shook again and burst inward. For a moment, Dorful was framed in the doorway. Then the red golem lowered his head, spread his arms, and charged. It wasn't a very fast run, but it did have a terrible momentum, like the slow slide of a glacier. The floorboards shook and drummed under Dorful. The golems collided with a clang in the middle of the floor. Jagged lines of fire spread across the king's body as cracks opened, but it roared and caught up Dorful around the middle and tossed him against the wall. "Come on," said Angela. "Now can we find Sherry and get out of here?" "We ought to help him," said Carrot, as the golems smashed into each other. "How? If he can't stop it, what makes you think we can? Come on." Carrot shook her head. "Her off." Dorful picked himself up from among the bricks and charged again. The golems met, scrabbling at one another for purchase. They stood locked up for a moment, creaking, and then Dorful's hand came up holding something. Dorful. Something. Dorful pushed himself back and smashed the other golem over the head with its own leg. As it spun, Dorful's other hand lashed out but was grabbed. The king swiveled with a strange grace, bore Dorful to the ground, rolled and kicked out. Dorful rolled too, flung out his arms to stop himself, and looked back to see both his feet pinwheeling into the wall.